Hi, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And we're going to start this one off with some coronavirus updates. I was listening to 11 o'clock comics, and they did announce that possibly a Diamond would start shipping again. This is a rumor, by the way, but it came from a couple of sources, they said. That things would start back up to normal around May 20th. So, normal is relatively speaking. I don't know if that means that they'll start shipping on the 20th, but what will be there to, remaining is yet to be seen. I know DC Comics has been sending out surveys to retailers about, just asking questions of whether they're open, what their possibilities of receiving shipments are and stuff like that. And I think that they're looking at other distribution channels. So I think the distribution game is probably going to change the most, along with shops. There's going to be a lot of shops that just go out of business. They really do function on a low profit baseline, at least the ones that aren't are don't have multiple things like records and video games and all kinds of other things to support them. So it should be interesting. But anyway, I was going to take I was asked to ask questions for a survey, and whether that get published or not, I doubt if they'll be published, but I was asked questions for a blog to answer some stuff, and then I may or may not be quoted. I probably won't be. But I thought they were okay questions. It just said, first introduce yourself. Well, you guys all know me. I'm Mike Myers. Been podcasting since about 2007, 2006. I have over 77,000 comics slash collected editions because my database combines them. So, I can't distinguish between the two very easily in a total number, but I don't have all of my collected editions archived. I just started doing that about 5 years ago. A matter of fact, usually when the database I go weekly and there's this thing called Sidekick, and it constantly you like schedule it for doing updates. So it goes to the web and downloads updates all the time, but some of the collected editions, they don't get filled out, especially when it comes to Epic Collections. So if you see Epic Collections and Comic Base, it's probably because of me. It's probably because I'm entering it manually and then submitting it. Because all the other omnibus and stuff, and a lot of the DC ones, the hardcovers and soft covers, they get recorded. But for some reason, nobody records those Epic Collections, and I would think they would be pretty popular. But that be me. And then it said, like, what podcast do you do? I do Geek Brunch Retro, Mike M's Weekly Reads, Mike M's Collector's Corner, DC Noise, DC Spotlight, DC Everything Else. I've been part of the Valiant podcast, where I've met a lot of friends through. I've been part of Gotham by Geeks. I still show up from time to time. I started off doing my Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise. That was my very first podcast going back to like late 2006, 2007. So, yeah, I've been in the podcasting business and nonstop for the most part. I haven't quit. But they said with the distribution freeze, what is your biggest concern and how it'll affect the comic book industry? I answered this one way, and now I want to answer it another way. I think there's two things that are my biggest concern. My biggest concern is that comics were already on a downward spiral as far as like, people, buying comics. My worry is that the Todd McFarlane said, like the longer you're sober, the easier it is for you to be sober. Well, I think that could be true for a lot of the comic collectors. They might have found different forms of entertainment and realized, wow, I'm spending this much. And those people that are on fixed incomes are like, why am I spending this much when I could be watching Netflix, or I could be playing this video game or doing other things? I could be biking for exercise. because you are allowed to do some exercise in this quarantine. So, I guess my biggest worry is that the market will even be smaller than it was, and there'll be less choice to choose from in terms of comics. But that could be a good thing too. Sometimes Chris Campbell always sometimes would tell me, even though I've never adhered to it, is that sometimes less is more, and maybe that is true, because I've never tried it. But maybe less is more. I have tried it once when I was saving for the house. I almost stopped comic collecting entirely. I think I was just buying the Flash and maybe a couple of DCs. That was pretty much it. And then as soon as we had the down payment, then I started back up again. But when we were saving for a house, it was very bizarre. It was like the more it was going through the mortgage people, I mean through the builder, and they would like monitor your account, and it had like weird little clauses, like you couldn't accept a monetary gift greater than $500. So like if your mom and dad wanted to give you $500 to help you with your house down payment, you couldn't count that. You had to like acquire so much money just on your own, so they believed you could buy the house. I think times have changed, so they don't do that very much anymore. But I don't know. I haven't had to buy a house. This one house has been our house. Which is good, because I'm glad I don't have a house payment anymore. One of the best things we did early on is, and I'd encourage people that can afford it, do this, is usually you start off, when you're starting off, you get like a 30-year loan. And if you can refinance at a lower interest rate for a 15-year loan, for us, it was a no-brainer. It was a good deal. But I guess that's my big thing. But the other question is, who do you think is suffering the most? The readers, comic shops, publishers, distributors. I'll even throw creators in there. I think it's affecting everybody, but I think they all rely on each other. The consumer buys from the local comic book store, the local comic book store buys from the distributor. The distributor buys from the publisher, and the publisher pays for creation from the creator, and it's affecting everyone in the chain. One link in that chain affects all the others, but I think the one link that's affected the most right now is the LCS. I just feel like if there were like 2,000 stores, and we've lost two stores already in Colorado Springs prior to this virus. So I think that the stores are going to be diminished, and when there's less demand for product, that's going to change the distribution. And I think potentially the distribution game will change. I don't know what'll change too, but I think that Jeppy will probably sell his distribution business at some point. And whether he takes advantage of this virus as a way to get rid of the distribution chain and sell to somebody other, if anybody was interested in the chain, which it would be hard sell, it really would be, because I think 70% of comics are not profitable. In reality. And I think that they're used as like IRAD type properties, so they can get marketed as another multimedia thing, like t-shirts or toys or video games or cartoons or television or movies, that kind of thing. That's where the money is in having a property or an IP. Is to be able to sell the option to that property, and then have somebody develop it, and that's how they make it. That's where all comics really are. And Marvel has, made a lot of money by turning in their Marvel Studios and then acquiring Fox. They're going to make more money, although they're hurting. So this whole chain of comics is going to affect options too, because I think studios and TV sh they're backed up by 2 months or so. And when they start reshooting, they're not going to be hungry for new properties. They're going to want to, finish the existing properties that they already have. They're not going to be looking for more until the economy gets like a little boost. But in that chain, I would definitely say the LCSs are going to be reduced. I think during this time too, publishers are going to be looking at their lines and saying, "Well, I published 100 comics." With the exception of Marvel, I really don't think I think they want to dominate the market. So I don't think they're going to shrink. But I think all the other ones are going to say, like, AT&T's hurting right now. They've been buying and buying and nothing's been turning profit like they probably want. The Joker movie was a hit. The Birds of Prey was just, they broke even. I don't see them. And then at DirecTV, more people are going to streaming, so I think they're losing customers. I don't know what their phone system's doing compared to Verizon or any of the other published, providers, but there's a lot going on there, and I don't know. It's affecting everybody. Like even Marvel, like Disneyland, Disney World, they're closed. They've been closed for a long time. There's not a lot of cash flow there. A lot of people out of work. A lot of people have time to think about what's important and what to spend their money on. And when I was very, very young in my career, one of my bosses, he said, the 401k is really important. He said, all outside of your 401k, always have at least 3 months worth of salary. So I worked towards that, and I used the at least to the extreme. So I think it's good because let's say if you lose your job, the more you have stocked up, the more you can survive comfortably. So, have that time to find another job. And it might be less pay, so factor that in. It's just start doing the math. But this is a big deal. And things aren't going to look the way they look. The other thing that could happen with this long lag is people could have discovered, you know what? I don't need to be on top of things like I used to be. Like I used to be a Wednesday warrior, get my comics, get my comics, get my comics. Maybe they've had time to sit down and open up the DC app or the Marvel Unlimited and say, wow, there's a whole thousands and thousands of comics I could be reading. And for like $7 a month. So that could change a lot of the way things go. The other question, if the industry was able to bounce back, what do you hope changes about it or strengthens or alters the industry going forward? I don't really know how to answer that because as a consumer, I'm like the last thing on the totem pole in that chain of suppliers and providers, and I don't really notice anything. It could be because of the sheer quantity I buy and the but from my standpoint, I get my previews, which I like. I don't want that to go away. That's another thing that could go away is the bean counters at Diamond could say, you know how much we could save if people just went to this digital thing instead of print this whole bulking catalog that most people throw away? I used to throw them away. I don't anymore. They're a treasure trove of information, man. I love to look at like a 10-year-old preview and see what was coming out at the time. But yeah, previews could go away. But as a consumer, I pre-order, so I go through my previews, I select my order, I submit my order, I pay for my books before they come out, and when they come out, they get shipped to me, and then after a certain amount of time, those that don't get shipped or get canceled, I get a credit back into my pot of money that gets used for purchasing books. And I don't see anything broke as a consumer. I mean, there's lots of things broke in that chain, like at the publisher level, their late books and all the other stuff, but I don't so much care about that. books being late and stuff because of the sheer quantity. But this is probably going to change the way I do a lot of things. So, how has this affected you, directly? It affects me because I want to save more. It affected me because of retirement. I wanted to retire and read a lot more, and that retirement has gone away pretty much in the form of 401k has really went down. Stocks have gone down. And I think personally, like some people are saying at least 5 years, I'm a pessimist when it comes to things like that. I think it's going to be 10 years. So instead of my 5 year plan to retire, it'll probably be 10 years. Now, whether I still do the same thing or whatever, I probably won't retire until later. So it's probably changed a lot. But who knows? You can look at stocks in forms of two ways, but you want it to recover. But the last recession we had, I made the most money, so I could be better off for it because you're buying more stocks at lower prices when the economy's in the hole. Most people are just offloading, turning that into cash or whatever. But I think having cash, like my uncle, he retired fairly early. All my uncles did, except for my scientist uncle, but he chose that. He chose to be a consultant after he retired and worked a little bit longer. But my family retired early because he was a firefighter. But he started to work his own side jobs on the side, so even though he's retired, he's still working. But my uncle retired fairly early, and he said one of the things you could always do is save cash. Even though you don't earn interest on it, you could just save and save. That's an interesting perspective in terms of things like this, like when things just tank, because it's not invested in stock where you're earning interest and more money, but you just have a flat line because interest rates on savings accounts and checking are so fucking low. But I might be getting less. I haven't decided. I am going to place my order like a normal order this month, even though I don't think it will be fulfilled. I think what'll happen with the last two previous orders, the one before and the one that is out now, is that I think a lot of those books will be canceled. And for me, I'm not too worried because I know how DCBS works. DCBS is real conservative, so when they charge my credit card, they don't like to like say, "Oh, I've made this much money, I'm going to go, this is profit right now." They put it aside until the book is actually shipped, which means that they're prepared to take that money and refund it to me. Until it's released. Whereas some smaller comics, they probably blow their load right away. Oh, you charged it? Okay, that's profit. I'm gonna go spend it. I'm gonna go buy a nice steak meal. That kind of stuff. So yeah, things are definitely gonna change. Todd McFarlane made an interesting quote. He said, "Here's what I know about addicts. The longer they go sober, the easier it is to stay sober. We don't want our customers to break that habit. Customers will be filling their time somehow. Why let a competitor fill that streaming media, games, etc.? We need to fill it." And what he's saying is we need to provide digital. And it wouldn't hurt my head. One thing from the 11 o'clock comics interview with Christine from DCBS that was really interesting was she said she doesn't fear digital. She's been working digital. They had a digital portal to offer things through Comixology for the longest time, and they were successful doing it. And she says, like, I don't The people that want paper, we're going to usually want get paper, and the people that want digital are going to usually get digital. So she says, I don't fear digital. A matter of fact, she says digital helps the paper because people want a physical copy of something on their shelf, so that'll help them, get a collected edition on in-stock trades or something like that. But who's to say what's going to happen? I know for me that I have enough to read. This could go, I don't want it to go on forever, but in terms of comics, what I want is the world to be healthier again. There's just too many people dying. I have anxiety attacks sometimes at night, and they're so real because I have asthma, and I sometimes will read Facebook or social media, and there's a story of a nurse that watches somebody die and describes the breathing, and I've been there, and it's so fucking scary. I've been to the point where I had to be hooked up to a nebulizer because I couldn't fucking breathe, and you're fighting, and the worst thing you can do is stress out. You almost have to go like into a meditative state instead of getting your heart rate back up when you're having trouble breathing or you're having shallow breathing, but it's not easy to do. So overall, I just want the health of my family. A friend of mine, TJ, he lost his dad to coronavirus, and his mom's in the hospital. So, yeah, my condolences to TJ. TJ, I met through podcasting, mostly for Geek Brunch early on with Heath. And TJ did a podcast called the F Bomb Cast, and our actually first meetup at Heroes Con, I got to meet TJ, and I'm really sorry to see he lost his dad, and he's having to he can't go there, like he can't go to the hospital to hold his dad's hand, he can't go hang out with his mom and say, I'm here for you. These people are fucking dying alone. They are dying alone. And our government knew about this. And there's they our president said, oh, it's just like the flu. And who dies, who dies. Fuck this guy. Trump is the worst. I don't give a fuck who you are. He's a dick. And he has no compassion. He is an asshole. And he speaks like a child. He's an imbecile. And we need to get him out. We need to get him out. And I hope it's sooner than later. I hope this doesn't. I hope people go out and vote during this climate. The more people that vote, the better. 'Cause he's a ridiculous man, and he needs to. I don't side Republic. I voted Republican in the past. I voted Democrat in the past. For me, I've never complained about politics, ever. My family's never done it either. You just ride it. But man, this guy's a dickhole. He is so concerned with dollars and stuff, and his Monte Largo or whatever the heck that stupid club of his is, that he's willing to put people's lives. And this isn't the flu. The flu you have shots for. We know how to treat the flu. We don't know how to treat the coronavirus. You just ride it out. The best you can do is have your thermometer and a bottle of Tylenol, fever reducer of some sort. That's the best you can do. And then hope you don't have to be hooked up to a nebulizer, and then from a nebulizer to a respirator. So, yeah. But anyway, there's a lot of things that could happen to the industry, but what's really important is that people survive this more than media will survive some things will thrive. Like maybe if the coronavirus wasn't there, the Tiger King wouldn't be the phenomenon it is. But people have time now. They don't leave their houses. And some industries will probably thrive. I can't believe that some people are taking advantage, though, of those people that deliver food and not tipping them. That's just so fucking wrong. They're risking their lives to go get your goddamn groceries, and then you're faking a tip and saying, "Oh, I'll tip you $50." And then as soon as the transaction's complete, they lower their tip to zero. What the fuck is this? That's some bullshit, man. Oh well, enough of my ranting. I was listening to I just finished a funny comic today, so I'm gonna switch gears. It was literally a comic book about nothing. It was Larfleeze. I literally read the whole series. The plot is really simple. There's this faction of gods from another universe that come in, and that they've wiped out their universe, and they're now headed into our universe, and they're led by this one female. And this one female, Larfleeze has a butler, and she somehow claims that that butler belongs to her and causes a stir between Larfleeze and her family, which is like a family of deities. And they're being chased by a council of guardians of some sort that can't make a decision. And this is by J.M. DeMatteis and Giffen, so it gives you a flavor of where they're going. But it is literally just this adventure that goes on and on and on, and it's nuts. It's really funny and strange. And the butler's gonna get castrated, so there's like an ongoing gag for 2 issues. Like he doesn't want to lose his penis, but that one goddess wants to chop it off and neuter him, and he wants to go back to Larfleeze. But it's a really complicated thing. But anyway, I was listening to 11 O'Clock Comics, and they were talking about Buddy comics or team up comics. I thought it was interesting because I think I have all of the Brave and the Bold that in singles and a lot of them in collected editions from Batman teaming up with others. And there were some team ups before, but they talked about Brave and the Bold, and that is an awesome team up book. And then World's Finest was always Superman Batman from DC. And then DC Comics Presents, which is probably the team-up book that I really latched on to, because when I was getting really into comics, that's what the team-up book was. Brave and the Bold was sort of winding down to become Batman and the Outsiders. And World's Finest had already sort of been tailing end, although towards the tail end of World's Finest, they became those dollar books, which are really awesome because it would have the Superman Batman story, and then you get like a Green Arrow, a Metamorpho, a Creeper story. You get all kinds of crazy stories, and it was like an anthology. It was really, really cool anthology. They did the same thing with Adventure Comics. But those are the three big DC team-up books that you could point to. And then later on, in current time, you have Batman, Superman, Superman, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Trying to think of other buddy type team ups, but those are the main ones. And then on the Marvel side, I just completed my Marvel 2-in-1 about 2 years ago. That was the Thing and another character, and that was a lot of fun. And then my Marvel team up with Spider-Man, that was one I got really close to. I think I'm missing the first 10. I might have a few of them in that 10, but I need to finish that run relatively soon, and then I'll have all of the Marvel team ups. But my Marvel team ups, I never had a lot of. I mean, my big team up book there was Power Man and Iron Fist. That was probably the one that triggered me. And I got into Power Man because of Defenders. Defenders is kind of like where I branched off and did stuff, because there was that Sons of the Serpent storyline with those racist guys, and Power Man was involved, and I'm like, man, who's this guy on the Tierra? He's pretty badass. I want more of this. And then I bought a few more Defenders issues, and then he appeared in some Fantastic Four issues, and I'm like, oh, this Luke Cage is badass. And it was one of the early series besides Defenders and Champions that I knew I had to finish, Power Man and Iron Fist, and it started with Heroes for Hire. And Iron Fist, I just finished that series recently. But yeah, there's a lot of buddy books, and you can even go into Justice League with Booster Gold. I can't believe that didn't make their list. Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, that's one of the best buddy systems ever. So yeah, it was an interesting topic. It's interesting to see what some of them came up with. There was some odd ones that I wouldn't have thought of, just in stream of consciousness anyway. They had mentioned the Beast and Wonder Man. That's not an odd one. That one I think is pretty common. When they were in the Avengers together, you would think of them. You think of Johnny Storm and Peter Parker as being like buddies. Johnny Storm and Thing from another perspective, even though they show their love in a different perspective. Yeah, it's a fascinating topic to think about. And there's been some other there's Nightwing and Arsenal. There's Cyborg and Changeling, or Beast Boy, if you want to call him that. There's been a lot of like true buddies. I think all the Teen Titans have had a really strong relationship with each other. So, what I'm going to get into next is the weekly reads. I haven't done this in a while, and I want to record another one this weekend just to so I don't fall too far behind. Even though I do 3 weeks at a time, it's easy to fall behind still, and I don't want to. So let me go into where I put little asterisks in the form, and hopefully I'll be able to find it. Okay, so we left off in February of this year, February 10th to February 16th, and we'll start at the bottom. That week we had I read 35 comics. I read one Megaton, two Marvel, and 32 DC. So what you're going to be seeing over the course of these months is I've been really into DC comics again. So I had gone heavy into Marvel, and now I'm just like engrossed in DC. But we're going to start with the films. The film I watched was Tarzan, the 2013 animated. I believe it was generated in Germany, and it was really a fantastic cartoon. Like I wasn't sure I wanted to get into an animated Tarzan, but Tarzan was my adopt a character, and I hadn't seen this cartoon, and I had heard really good things about it way back in the day from DC Noise when Norbert said, "Hey, you got to watch this Tarzan." And it takes place like in current time, so it's a current take on Tarzan, going to the jungle with his parents and then losing his parents, and then you have a similar type version, but it has this asteroid hitting a certain part in Africa, and that part has become there's like this crystal that everybody's out after that can power up a lot of things. And the villain wants that crystal. And Tarzan, Jane comes down with her father because her father's like a environmentalist and he does tours and stuff. And I guess the parents are divorced and she comes out to hang out with her father and she meets Tarzan. But it's really an incredible animated series. I think I recorded it off of DirecTV and that's how I watched it. I don't think it's streaming anywhere anymore, but you could probably get it from Amazon Prime and pay for it or rent it. It's really worth your time if you're a Tarzan fan. There were times in there I was in tears too, because when you get an ape dying, it's hard to see. And in animation, you think, well, maybe I'll be filtered from it a little bit because it's cartoon, but it always isn't. So we'll start with the 3 out of 5s. We had Strike Force number 3. That's that oddball team with Blade. Blade's team goes into battle with the shape-shifting aliens. I forget what they're called. And Wiccan is tricking the aliens to think he's working with Doom, but it's really a Doom bot. The aliens escape, and the team is about to enter a creepy-looking villa town. There you go. The 4 out of 5s, we'll start with Ram. That's from Megaton. What is Ram? Ram is the one of the first appearances of Youngblood in advertisement form. So if you, it's worth a lot of money. It's like $100. Found out about this book from Bill Bomer. I mean, I probably would have run across it eventually when I was looking for Youngblood stuff, but it turned out to be a pretty good story. It's only 2 issues, but I only have the first one. Those of you that have been around the block know why this is worth money. Like I said, Youngblood. Having said that, I finally got a copy, and it's a cool story about a miniature alien whose world is destroyed, and he's blown back on a rock to Earth, and he hooks up with a drunk guy, and they get in like various antics, and he wants to eat all the time, and he consumes these like McDonald's and stuff, and he starts growing, and it just gets crazy, but it's interesting. It's in black and white. It's well worth your time if you can get a copy. Historically, it's well worth your time too. And then I read Curse of Brimstone, which is DC New Age of Heroes 1 through 12 plus number one annual. I reread 1 and 2 to refresh my memory. This is the Ghost Rider version of DC. I really love this New Age of Heroes. It's really good. So Joe sold his soul to the salesman and lost his town and his dad. Now him and his sister are on a mission to go town to town and stop him from killing towns, because that's what he's doing. He's consuming towns, this demon. They run into Enik, who also lost a deal but got out of the deal with the salesman somehow, and they want to figure out how. They also run into a town where it's like Children of the Corn. After Brimstone helps the defeat of the demon child, they head to another town on the salesman's map. So they're following the course of the salesman. It looks like town after town. There's a town of like Leave It to Beaver characters where everything looks really copacetic, but the townsfolks are creepy, and they're all missing appendages, and you sort of find out what's happening with that. It looks like they're meeting up with another agent of the salesman. Joe gives two Brimstone to save his sister from the rot. He sort of losing control the more he gives into Brimstone. She goes off and runs onto a serial killer, Jack again, who actually turned down the salesman but is living in the chaos. Dr. Fate finds Joe and tries to help Brimstone, but Brimstone trashes Fate. That was kind of weird, because you think Dr. Fate is fucking badass, and if Brimstone can take out Fate, you're like, what the fuck? Joe and Annie are reunited. Annie's his sister. An annual, they team up with Constantine and Swamp Thing to take on an inbred cult and a demon. It has a backstory on Jack and Enik, which we learned about very early on in the series. It's a final showdown with the salesman group, the home office. They have like weird names for demons, like the home office and the salesman. Home office battle, and Brimstone destroys him, and it appears he lost all his powers, so now Brimstone's powerless. The cliffhanger is it looks like they were all transferred to his sister Annie. So it's really interesting. I thought this was awesome. I don't know if we'll ever see Brimstone again, but I'd be all over it. We had a Steeple number 2. I didn't count that one, so I do have one more book. Dark Horse, A Steeple. Oops. So now it's a total of 36 books. I missed it. And that's Billy works for her demon friend Maggie, and she wants to get help for some troubled teenagers. This is number two. Billy witnesses her friend Maggie in a satanic ritual. She's in that town, and she's on the Satan side, where she's on the religious side with the priest. The main priest goes down to kill a monster, but he's a harmless, friendly creature. So it's an interesting, weird story. We had Harlequin and the Birds of Prey. This is a black label. Harley and Poison Ivy is separate on bad terms. She goes back home only to find her home destroyed and her short friend Tony in the hospital. She seeks revenge on those that hurt Tony and find that someone is in Gotham is responsible. And she takes a train back to Gotham and teams up with the Huntress, Cassandra Cain, and Renee Montoya. And they're very much more in the flavor of the film versions. She has a really funny scene where there's some really good Power Girl stuff in here. But there's one scene where she's sleeping with the Harleys, and they're calling it all in clothes or no clothes, drawn by Amanda Conner, and she's got somebody's feet. And she's like, "What's the smell?" Like she's dreaming and stuff. It's like toad cheese, and I just laughed out loud. I know it's gross, but it was funny. We have Metal Men, 2 through 4. Dr. Magnus and crew take out the nth metal in the take on an nth metal man in the pit. That the pit is like their where they're. I don't know if that's where they. That's like their headquarters. It's called the Pit. It's almost like G.I. Joe. He's reunited with an old love. Nth Metal Man takes out the responsometer from Gold, and we think that it kills him, but he comes back. A huge manta comes through the breach, and the Metal Men try to contain it, but the Nth Metal Man had to take it down. Magnus shows go. He can virtually turn the headquarters into a giant robot. That's pretty cool. Nth Metal made Gold better and atomically correct. Like he gave him a dick. Nth Metal is now with Mercury and Iron, and they are going to change to see if to take out their responsometers when they were injured. Magnus goes on a date with Janet, and Lead and Tin go to Robocon, which is like a comic con for robots, like famous robots. Like there's a table there, and you'll see Robot Man from All Star Squadron. You'll see the robot that hung out with Space Ranger. It's insane. It's a crazy scene. And the Metal Men have some of the biggest lines there. What else was it? Oh, and then at the end of this arc in 4, Omak shows up. Omak appears. So that was right up my alley. And then in the last 4 out of 5 is Damage, 3 through 10 in annual number 1. This is their Hulk version, and this was a lot of fun. Damage is unleashed in Atlanta by Colonel Jonas and takes on Wonder Woman. He beats her. He then takes a ride back of a rig and makes a friend who gives him a job on a farm, and they run into Poison Ivy, who is made on what they're. I don't know what I was saying there. Poison Ivy, who is made on what they are doing to the wheat. Oh, mad. So, like, at the farm, they're using the tools to strip out the wheat, and she's pissed out about it. So Poison Ivy knocks out Damage. When Damage recovers, he takes on Poison Ivy and Grodd. Still has 1 hour of power, and it's tied to Moralco, which is the Hour Man drug. That's pretty awesome from a continuity perspective. Colonel Jonas pisses off Amanda Waller and has a group hunting down Damage. Poison Ivy was being controlled by Grodd. You find out Damage somehow allows that tie to break, and both work together to take down Grodd. There's a scene with Ethan conversing with Swamp Thing, where he has Damage destroy the forest. just created because of the ramifications they're having on it. He then ends up on a boat where Colonel Jonas, starting to lose track because it's like this is a really long ride up. Colonel Jonas's team is there. He's kind of like the colonel that's always chasing down the Hulk. They make a move against orders, and the boat is destroyed, and Ethan is found and put in the hospital. He has a run-in with the unknown soldier, so it like ties in the unknown soldier. That was a really cool arc. And they work together to take down Colonel Jonas' superpowered team. We learn Colonel Jonas's lover is in the same hospital, and their goal is to make damage so she would never have to see another soldier die. So that scientist's whole goal was to make damage a super soldier so soldiers would not have to die. So she had good intention. Ethan is heading into a building where he was created. After his run-in with the unknown soldier, the annual is a story of when Damage was deployed to Balia to fight other scientists who was experimenting on the formula, and Damage fights four other monsters and kills two of them. Jonas kills the third when he's reverted back to human. Ethan examines a thumb drive that unknown soldier gave him and sees how much destruction and death that he has caused personally. He goes to the facility to destroy the damage program. Dr. Vess, I lost my mouse. What the hell? All right, I'm back. Some technical difficulties with the mouse. So I just need to find out where I left off. Dr. Vess takes something from the facility and calls the Justice League to confront Damage. Guy, Flash, Vixen, and Green Arrow, a really small Justice League band, goes after him. This leads to a battle with Superman and Batman, and they actually bring in Deadman, just as he reverts to human, to take control of Damage. Batman offers him a place in the league, but he refuses, and when that happens, Batman tricks him and leaves him on this like monster island, which is called Monster Rock. There he is mentored by Congo Bill slash Congorilla, and they fight in Sidna, Queen of the Monsters. She is able to merge different species together. Congo Bill feels he passed a test and allows him off the island, so allows Damage to leave, and that's how it ends. Now, whether we see him or not again, we'll never. I don't know if we'll ever know. We then get into the 5 out of 5s, which is dominated by Stephen King's son, Joe Hill. We have Dollhouse Family Number 4, the explosion that caused the mother to lose a leg and go into a coma. The daughter loses an arm. The father is back in their lives because the mother was in a coma. This is like a father that she it was a one-night stand. And she had sex, and that's why our character in Dollhouse Family had a kid, and she never told him. But the father got in when they were in the hospital. The mother knows that the Black Room is responsible for it and wishes it away. However, the daughter, Una, is sucked into the house by an evil spirit, Jenny. Laylee's leg grows back as she is able to sleep with, and able, as she's sleeping with Jake. It's like one of those sudden things, her leg's back. More backstory about Cordwainer and the dollhouse in 1847. We then get into Daphne Byrne, the mother, number one. The mother is told to remarry by a seance woman. This is probably number two. This isn't number one. Daphne is being followed by that creepy boy from her dreams. The three girls that are from the school pick on her, but she gets back at them by scaring one of the girls with a visual nightmare of her face. Somehow the boy did it. That creepy boy that's like hovering over Daphne. They took the blood in Daphne's bed, and clothes is just that time of month. So when the woman came in. They still have a housekeeper, even though they're very low on money. She came in and thought that she was becoming a woman, and that's how they wrote it off. But that blood was not because she had her period. Nope. We then get into DC's Resurrection Man 1 through 4. This is volume 1. Mitch Shelley dies, and each time he comes back, he has a different power. It seems that every time he is reincarnated, he remembers a little bit about his past. He assists the Justice League to take down Amazo, even though the team does not know about it. They don't know that Resurrection Man is the reason that they were able to succeed. He then goes back home to find out his best friend and wife are now dating and sleeping together, and they try to kill him in a gas explosion. He teams up with an insurance fraud agent, and then is attacked by a dead creature looking to kill him. This is a guy that's like following Resurrection Man throughout the whole book. I forget what he calls himself. He is killed many times, and the woman gets help from a corrupt cop. So there's a lot going on with Resurrection Man. I've read it before. This is my second reading. Dr. Doom number 2, this is the new series. Doom is taken into custody because he's believed to have killed those people working at that black hole project on the moon. Kang frees him, and Morgan Le Fay offers to help Dr. Doom with the situation. Blue Marvel is recruited by Herbie the Robot to help. At the end, when Le Fay and Doom are out, Taskmaster shoots Victor in the head. It's a really exciting Hunt for Red October type book, Doctor Doom. We then get into February 17th through February 22nd. We had 17 comics, 2 Zenoscope, 2 Marvel, 2 Image, 10 DC, 1 Ablaze. We'll start at the bottom. Silver Surfer Black. This is my least favorite, but this is a 3 out of 5. Yeah, people love the art and stuff, but to me, the Donny Cates story just wasn't as good as the other stuff Silver Surfer I've been reading, because Silver Surfer is my adopted character for this year, along with Tarzan. Even though I've gotten really lax, I was really making good progress. I was on a track to hit maybe 100 books on Silver Surfer, and probably more on track to hit 70 now, at the end of the year. We'll see how all that goes. Surfer, as he's getting sucked into a black hole at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy Annual, which I hadn't read yet, and he is remembering all the worlds and creatures he has helped destroy with Galactus, and he's feeling like this huge amount of guilt. He uses his cosmic powers to save others, but then lands on a planet where he has to fight these strange-looking creatures and runs into Null, who's the Venom God. One of his hands is all black now, and I think it starts to consume his whole arm. So then we get into Dead Man, number 3 and 6. This is the Neil Adams series. I think it started off stronger. All his series start off fairly strong, and then they go batshit crazy. But this is Dead Man on a journey to Nada Parbat. When he finds out Ra's al Ghul was involved in his death, and you kind of knew that indirectly, because in the original series, it's the League of Assassins. It reads like one big acid trip, visually stunning, but most of it will not get a comprehensive. You can't get a comprehensive story, but I am glad I read it, and it does lead into the Batman Ra's al Ghul story. And by Neil Adams, and I don't think that one is finished yet, and I've heard that it's been canceled, so I don't know if it will finish. And with the coronavirus, I don't know what's going to happen with it, but we'll see. We had a Moon Knight annual that came out in 2019. It's called an Acts of Vengeance annual, and it leads to the battle throughout time with Kang the Conqueror. So if you're a Kang the Conqueror and Moon Knight fan, you probably should check this out. And it's dealing with them fighting over 3 Khonshu objects. We then have Gretel number 1, Zenoscope. It's a story of Gretel, who lost her brother very early on and now is a witch hunter who hunts witches and eats their hearts and gains their powers. She was trained by Samuel. Later, she finds her mentor Samuel, and that she may be the hunted, and her mentor is now injured. So now the hunter is being the hunted. We have 20XX number 2 from Image Comics. The woman that gained powers to cause skin to explode is taken to the west side by her cousin who worked on both gangs. So this is our main character. She reluctantly joins the gang and makes an oath, lies to the west side. Meanwhile, the east side finds out what's going on and sends the agent undercover to go after our main character. And she was well established in the first issue. She had nothing to do with these gangs, but now she's caught up in a world that she doesn't want to be in because she now has these powers. And when you're the powers in this world, you're kind of like treated really bad, kind of like the X-Men. And they segregate you into these towns and they catalog you and all kinds of stuff. Because when you get this disease, it's like a disease, it's like a coronavirus. You die, and most people die. So let's say 90% die. Well, the 10% that survive come back with powers. It's weird how there have a lot of images having a lot of contagion type stories like the clock and this, and there's real life shit going on that's very similar. We have Lost God from DC Comics, a story of how King Tyr defeated an evil god. It later focuses on a character, Evindor, who wins his freedom as a gladiator, but the queen mysteriously denies his freedom. The king is overtaken by the last god, and it looks like the city is infected again. The kingdom is on fire, and the guard asks for help from the two gladiators that were supposed to have their freedom, but are now just watching their city burn. A beautiful book that reads like a sword and sorcerer movie. It turns out Evandor is the illegitimate son of Tyr, the king, and brought the old god back because as soon as he saw his sin, chaos would reign. So the thing is this king kind of sold his soul to a demon, and everything would be copacetic until the king realized his sin. And then once he realized his sin, which was having sex with another woman to create a son, that caused the demon to be freed. It's really, really good, and it's a beautiful book. We have Oz, Heart of Magic. Dorothy's body was taken over by an evil sorcerer. All her allies in Emerald City think she is weird, but help the evil wizard torture the citizens by promising them awesome homes outside the wall, but they're really becoming slaves. So it really sucks because I think the guy with the pumpkin head is, he doesn't know that Dorothy's really this evil wizard, and Dorothy's off running adventures somewhere else. Dorothy's in another body, goes to the underworld with a band of allies looking for a good witch, Glenna, and Drazed. Really good series, Zenoscope. We have Resurrection Man 5 and 6, the finale to the first arc, as Mitch gathers all his enemies into one place. A lot of people die. His best friend dies, and his wife is committed. A lot of the mob is killed. He remembers everything and how he was involved with the mob, so he wasn't a good person before getting the Resurrection Man powers. At the end, the body doubles capture him. The origin of the body doubles as one girl grew up poor and had to strip for a living and goes back to torture her old boss. The other is the daughter of a mob enforcer that wanted a boy, so she had something to prove, and she has to prove it to her father. When I say she wanted a boy, it wasn't she wanted a boy. She wanted to be born a boy. And because she was born a woman, her father treated her differently in the mob. Mitch Shelley is in the trunk of a car with no powers because Genesis event is going on. That's a company-wide crossover. Luckily, when the doubles take them to the scientists who helped create him, he is test negative, and they give him back to the doubles, and they just shoot him. But Genesis is over, so he gets resurrected back with fire powers to fight the doubles. Also, Mitch's father finds the discs and takes them to the insurance investigator who's in the hospital. And those discs kind of tell him the history of everything that's going on. We have Gung Ho, number one. It's about two brothers that lost their parents and grew up in an orphanage, are granted a home at a remote outpost in a danger zone. It's really great characterization, and we learn at the end that the outpost has been infiltrated. The clock number one, speaking of outbreak type stories, this is a 5 out of 5. We're now in the 5 out of 5s. We got the clock. Cancer has overtaken Earth, and the scientist is searching for a cure in pockets of civilization that appear to be unaffected with the cancer. And he's doing this with his father. He then get and during this time too, they're having to fight off like mercenaries and stuff because it's in part of Africa where there's a fight for power and stuff like that. So they're having to, fight off people like just if it was like a humanitarian type effort. He then gets a call that his wife died of cancer while he's off on this adventure. He goes back to briefing. And he lets the leaders know what is happening and is passes a note that his wife was murdered. So cancer has been weaponized. This is a story Matt Hawkins wrote. The back matter is absolutely fascinating because he went to medical conventions and started asking questions, raised his hand, can cancer be weaponized? And they looked at him really strange. And it turns out that after talking to many scientists that you can weaponize cancer, but it's like such a long process, like the way cancer works, that it doesn't seem like it's a weaponized cancer. So that's it's very frightening. Lois Lane 4 through 6. Lois still, this is a 5 out of 5, one of my favorite comics. Lois still investigating the Russian reporter's death. Jonathan surprises Lois in the shower. And Lois thinks it was Clark, which was a really awkward scene because she was ready to get her sexy on, and it's her fucking son. And you got to remember, her son's been aged, and he's basically telling her he's gonna go into the future. He says his goodbyes as he goes into space. Lois deals with the death of her father from Event Leviathan, and the funeral scene is mind-blowingly realistic. And I was in tears because I had just gone to a funeral for my cousin, and the way the artist combed the scene, it was just amazing. So that finishes the book for February 17th through February 22nd. Let's get to February 23rd through March 2nd. Total of 37 comics. We had 4 Marvel, 2 Kickstarter, 31 DC. Start at the 3 out of 5s. So we have Silver Surfer Black. Silver Surfer escapes Null and goes to visit Ego, the living planet, and finds a Galactus device. I think this book was really written for an artist's interpretation. Like it was really meant to be an art book because there's not like a lot of meat in it. But we got I gave it a 3 out of 5 because I need the meat. We have Batman 61 and 62. This is a 3 out of 5. The story about a whacked kid that thinks he is Bruce Wayne. This plays into the story later on, which is makes it a little better. He is eventually incarcerated at Arkham Asylum. He does have a similar origin story that began in earlier issues of Batman. The second part of Nightmare is when Batman dreams he is being held by Professor Pig and is being bled out. We have Legion of Superheroes, Volume 8, Number 1 through 3. The President of United Planets is very upset with the Legion. Use time travel to bring back Superboy to their time. Ultra Boy steals Aquaman's trident from Mordru and Horaz. Superboy is caught up there in the in a planet Gotham that goes back in time to get Robin, and Ultra Boy and others going to confront his father, and his father, Ultra Boy's father, is sort of a criminal and being imprisoned by the Legion. Legion have to send Robin back just as soon as he arrives. Ultra Boy's father is causing a ruckus back at headquarters. Superboy and Mon-El do take him out. And we then get to the 4 out of 5s. The Wake, number one. This is Scott Snyder, and I can't think of the artist, but he's really popular. A whale scientist. Scientist is recruited to decipher sounds for the government. Her son is coming to visit her. She had previously been fired from an organization called NOAA and now seeks to restore her name. There really is a NOAA organization too, just FYI. There is a science there's a scene with a cybernetic dolphin from in the future, and that plays into the part because this story like goes way into the future. It's very weird. It's like the first five issues are grounded, and then 6 through 10 are really jump ahead. It gets really crazy. I think the first part of The Wake is much better than the second part of The Wake. We have Elektra, second series, number 14. Elektra fights Kurihama of the Hand, as he says, she owes the Hand and should be there in their service. She disgraced the Hand, and she. I don't know what I wrote. So this Koriyama killed Nina, which is the girl that lives with her, because he wants her to work for the Hand. And that girl was left fatherless without a family, and kind of Elektra was taking care of her. Elektra spends the rest of the issue tracking down the Hand and working with Wolverine to find out who ordered this hit on her. Then we get Batman 70 through 73. Batman fighting his way out of a fevered nightmares and finds him and his father in the middle of the desert. We have Batman Annual number 3. It's Father's Day issue, which shows how much Alfred worries about Master Bruce. Also, what is really cool is this new character called the Drone, who flew drones for the military and is killed. And it killed a lot of innocents, and now he's seeking revenge on anyone who had anything to do with the creation of the drone. I have to come let Harley in, but you could see I was marathoning a lot of Tom King Batman, which I didn't get to finish. I kind of finished the Nightmare story arc, and then I got distracted and went down another rabbit hole. But I'm almost done here, so bear with me. Oh, Harley Quinn. Ah. I have to go outside and clean her off because she was rolling in the grass. Come here, Harley. Harley. Come here, Harley. So sorry for this, but this is life. And she goes and rolls in the grass. It's still, the grass is sort of turning green, but there's still a lot of dead grass. I haven't raked it. And she gets brings all that dead grass inside. Don't want her to do that. So, what I found out is these last 3 weeks I took some really shitty notes. I gotta get better at that. Yeah, so we're talking about the drone. He has an interesting origin story. I'd like to see them do something with him, but who knows? We have Batman 63. This is the dream sequence with the bat and the cat and their relationship with John Constantine. In their relationship, but it stars John Constantine narrating and telling Bruce, if you continue down this course, she will die of the relationship. It's really interesting. I like how they were playing Constantine in Batman the Damned, and now they're playing Constantine in the Batman proper book. It's really interesting because Batman and the Damned, Constantine's fucking narrating the story. And you're like, why the fuck is this happening? And then you realize the twist, and you're like, holy shit, that's pretty imaginative. We have Maggie the Cat number 1 and 2, never finished from Image Comics. This was the Kickstarter though, and it was really one issue that contained 1 and 2, but I took credit for 1 and 2. A lot of people I know, the podcasters, they'll just say they read the whole volume, but I take credit for the individual issues. Maggie is blackmailed into stopping an old Nazi by stealing a painting for this guy. Originally, she's going to be a series for Image, but issue 3 never came out because the industry kind of fell out from underneath it. This is the first 2 issues plus some bonus material, which will hopefully end up concluding at some point. Hopefully, we'll have another Kickstarter to finish that story. There's really a lot more to this story though, because this couple goes out to the countryside and stay with this countess. Well, the countess is Maggie the Cat, and she has a butler, kind of like Alfred, and are there. Well, it turns out the woman that she brought was someone her ex-husband had slept with, and she had this jewelry, so she goes out at night to steal it, and the guy catches her, and that's how he blackmails her and says, "We gotta take out these Nazis," like this one Nazi that he was a kid back that was raised sort of by Hitler, and we gotta take him out. We have Gwenpool Strikes Back number four. Immortal Hulk is after Gwenpool, and she must yank former selves of her out of the timeline to stop him. Also, the creator of Gwenpool shows up on a classic page. It's one of those weird scenes. I actually missed the issue before this, and I found out it never came out. Well, at least at my shop. And then I, because for some reason I was getting Gwenpool at my comic shop rather than DCBS. And then I went to check mycomicshop.com and they were out of stock. And I think what happened with this book is it had a misprint or was damaged, and a lot of shops shipped back the product and then never got a replacement. So I think it's going to be a bitch for me to find number three. We have Dr. Fate Volume 2, 2, and 3. This book is crazy good. Order and Chaos want it all to come to an end so they can start the whole world over again, the whole universe. Eric and Linda don't know what the hell they're doing as Dr. Fate. And Typhoon takes up residence in Jack Small's body, he's the neighbor, and forms an alliance with Dead Kent, which is Kent Nelson, to stop them. Chaos recruits Andrew Bennett, who is known as Ive Vampire. So I read those digitally because I just got into those and was reading them really late at night. Flash 64 and 65, Batman 64 and 65. This was the button second part of it, and I liked it a lot. I liked it way more than I thought it would. The Flash and Batman deal with the aftermath of Heroes in Crisis. Gotham Girl set loose by Bane, along with a version of Gotham, which is her brother, on Central City and the Flash Museum. They stop Gotham Girl and take her back to the cave to heal. Superman and Batman investigating something, and Batman asks if they should bring in the Flash. Batman hesitates. Iris leaves Barry for a while. I haven't been reading Flash, so it'd be interesting to see what was going on because of what happened to Wally. So the ramifications of Heroes caused Iris to sort of leave Barry as well. So, yeah, and I hadn't read a lot of that Flash, and I just wanted to tie in the arc, so I looked up the issues, I found them, and I wanted to finish this arc, and I did. It was really good. 4 out of 5. Another 4 out of 5 is Batman 66 through 69. In one issue, Batman is having a nightmare through the eyes of the Question, asking Catwoman why it did not work out. Another was a Batman chasing a character and eventually ending up in the water, and it is the Joker. An issue with Lois and Selina having a bachelor party in the Fortress of Solitude while Bruce and Clark play chess in the manor. There's another nightmare about Bruce and Selina having a conversation of his greatest fear and realizing he is under fear toxin. There is a cool scene with Bane fighting Thomas Wayne. I really appreciated this, reading it in bulk. So I was, as I started off, I wasn't too crazy about it, but as I moved through some of these Batman stories, I really enjoyed them. We then get into the 5 out of 5s, Deathbed 2 through 6. Antonio Luna is an adventurer that hires Valentin Richards to catalog his adventures before he dies. He's kind of like a Doc Savage. He is attacked by his enemies, or Tom Strong, if you want to go that way. He's attacked by his enemies that lead these two on a huge adventure where they go investigate who is killing everyone that ever knew Luna, Antonio Luna. They are captured by the Luna cult and almost eaten because they think they can absorb his knowledge, but then they are saved. They venture to his home and find a rocket that takes them to the moon, where he discovers his father is behind this and the murders. Luna eventually dies in the future and is failed, and the failed writer becomes successful telling the stories as if they were fiction. So it's almost like if she's telling the stories of Doc Fiction, Doc Savage, but they were real. She eventually dies, and her daughter gives an incredible speech about her life. It was really good eulogy. American Mythology 3-6, another good Vertigo title. Deathbed was Vertigo, DC. An FBI's partner is lynched, so she hires former agent to uncover, to go undercover with a white supremacist ring that leads him into falling in love with a white supremacist daughter and granddaughter. She's deaf, and he falls in love with the daughter too, as his own, and eventually his death by his partner. It should be a movie. If I was a producer, I would snatch this up, grab the rights, because it's incredible. We have Lois Lane 7 through 8. The question, Renee Montoya thinks Lois is cheating on Clark. She stops a guy taking pictures of them cheating because she sees him kissing Superman. I saw mommy kissing. No. Renee hands over a recording of who put the hit on Lois, and it is someone named Lawrence Shaw. And then the new housekeeper cleans Lois's room, and she doesn't like it. She says, something's up with this housekeeper. We find out that that's Kiss of Death, new character. Lois is being watched and recorded by someone in Leviathan that has a skull for a face. That's Kiss of Death. Jessica Midnight is visited by a nun, but not really a nun. Jessica escapes as the nun. The new maid turns out to be Kiss of Death. Renee and her fight, and Lois shoots her. Renee and Kiss of Death fight, and Lois shoots her in the shoulder, but she gets away. Lois goes looking for Alejandra, the maid that used to be that take care of the room, because she became really close to that maid in the series. The world knows Lois is married to Superman, because that happens as Superman's outed to the world. So when the cops arrive, everybody's awestruck. So really good tie-in. Rucka is tying in the story with the Vent Leviathan, tying in with the Bendis stories. It's really flowing really well. So just as a wrap-up, I think that's... I did one more week. So then that took me to March 3rd through March 8th, and there really wasn't anything there. I watched... there were 12 comics, one Udon, two Marvel, and 9 DC. I watched The Invisible Man. This was like right before coronavirus, which I gave a 4 out of 5. Really good film. And then I Am Not Okay With This on Netflix. I gave a 5 out of 5. I couldn't put it down. It was amazing. The 4 out of 5s that week, there were only 4 out of 5s. We had World's Finest Volume 3, number 17 through 24, in Annual number 1. This is the New 52. Kara and Helena from Earth 2 deal with trying to get back home after being stranded on Earth 1. Kara is Power Girl and dealing with her powers going in and out because of Desaad. She is trying to keep her company going, but sells it to get back home. The annual deals with their backstories growing up with their fathers and finding out Wonder Woman's child is evil. That leads into Earth 2. That's important. That leads into like what the early happenings on the Earth 2 series in New 52. Silver Surfer 5 through 7. Surfer teams up with Doctor Strange and Banner to stop Nightmare. He then finds he can't leave Earth unless he is with Don Greenwood. This volume is the one by Adler does the artwork, and it's Dan Slott. So they go off into an adventure in space and find another universe where there's no light. And when they find the light, they find out it's trying to consume them, sort of like a black hole. Then they go to a world where every person is an expert in something, and Warrior One is trying to arrest them. That was a really cool story. I like that a lot. Menage a Trois, number 1. This is the Udon manga. Really thick maybe 300, 400 pages. A guy loses his roommate because he wants to leave with his gay lover. He actually walks in on them as they're having sex, and he didn't even know his roommate was gay or bisexual. I think one of the guys is bisexual, one of them is gay. He has to find two new roommates and finds two new roommates. Z, a bisexual punk rocker with no job, and Dee Dee, an Amazon. She's a sexy woman from French Canadian, I think, which makes for a funny sexual Three's Company type story. Very entertaining. Highly recommended. 4 out of 5. And that wraps up the comics for this week. Again, the 5 out of 5s were Deathbed 2 through 6. American Mythology 3 through 6, Vertigo, both of them. Lois Lane 7 through 8. The Clock from Image Comics, number 1. Lois Lane 4 through 6. And Dollhouse Family, number 4. Daphne Byrne, number 2. Resurrection Man, number 1 through 4. And Doctor Doom, number 2. And I think that takes us to the end of this episode. I want to thank you for listening. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch on Twitter and mike@comicbooknoise.com. Check out all my podcasts. You can listen to Geek Brunch, Geek Brunch Retro, Mike M's Weekly Reads, Mike M's Collector's Corner, DC Spotlight, and DC Everything Else. And I have been re-putting out DC Noise podcasts as classic replays. So check those all out. And if you get a chance, leave an iTunes review. I haven't gotten one in since 2006. I don't know. It's been a long time. So talk to you later, and I hope you have a good one in quarantine and you're keeping everyone safe. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.